Good evening.
We continue our look at the parables, and tonight we're going to look at the parable of the lost son found in Luke chapter 15, verses 11 through 32. We're also going to sum up the parables of the lost sheep and the lost coin as we go along. Usually we read the text together before the lesson, but this evening's text is rather lengthy, so we're just going to read it as we go through the sermon. Most people know the parable of the lost son pretty well. Yet before we make some applications with this parable, let's look at the background to it. Under Jewish law, the terms by which a father assigned his inheritance were quite specific. How specific? Let's look at part of the law in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 21. Verses 15 through 17, Deuteronomy 21, 15 through 17. It says, if a man has two wives, one loved and one unloved, and they have borne him children, both loved and unloved, and if the firstborn son is of her who is unloved, then it shall be on the day he bequeaths his possessions to his sons, that he must not bestow firstborn status on the son of the loved wife in preference to the son of the unloved, who is truly the firstborn. But he shall acknowledge the son of the unloved wife as the firstborn by giving him a double portion of all that he has, for he is the beginning of his strength, the right of the firstborn is his. Deuteronomy 21:17 suggests that typically the eldest son would receive two shares and the other sons one share each. A father could, by virtue of a testament, designate a younger son as firstborn and reassign the right of the double share to him. But he could not do so, however, if he is married to multiple women and previously had chosen to hate, which probably means demote, actually, the mother of the biologically oldest son. In this case, the oldest retained the status of the firstborn. Law is quite specific, a lot of detail in it. The firstborn is the beginning of his strength, and the right of the firstborn is his. In other words, with two sons, two-thirds of the father's property went to his firstborn son. And so the son who went away in this parable that we're going to read about would only get one-third of the inheritance. During Old Testament times, a person apparently did not have to wait until their father died to get their inheritance like we do today. The father could give them their share of the possessions while he was still alive. In Luke 15, verse 12, the younger son demanded his share of the inheritance from his father. And he said in verse 12, Father, give me the portion of goods that fall to me. He couldn't wait. He wanted his inheritance right now. The son is doing what was not being supportive of his father. In fact, his request was rather callous and heartless. What he is saying to his father is, give me now that part of the estate that I'm going to get when you're dead anyway. That's what he's telling him. He's saying, give it to me now so that I can get out of here. Now, we know that many children go through a rebellious stage. In fact, most of them do at some point in their lives. Usually, it's when they're in their teens, and possibly that's what's happening here. The younger son feels that he has been the baby of the family long enough, and it's now time for him to strike out and go it alone. As it is now in those times, this action carried with it some potential consequences. And if you are curious about those, you can read Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 18 through 21. But we won't go into that in this lesson. Imagine this happened today. I'm sure that most of us who have kids would certainly have a few things to say. We wouldn't let them go without at least a lecture on the world and morality. But I want you to notice how the father deals with the situation. The text says at the end of verse 12 in Luke 15, so he divided to them his livelihood. He did not argue with his son. He did not try to persuade him otherwise. He simply let him go. Why? Why didn't he give him a moral lecture like we might do? We're not told, of course. But as parents, we might suspect the father let him go simply because he knew his son well enough to know that his son was never going to learn unless he had a hard way to teach him. For some reason, he gave in to this request. Some people are like that today. They will never learn unless they learn the hard way. The son gets his inheritance, and in some way he has it in portable form, and he takes off. Does he use it to obtain land and start his own farm? No. Luke 15, verse 13 says, "And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living." Anyone know what prodigal is? Interesting word. Basically, it means slothful or degenerate living. "But when he had spent it all, there arose a severe famine in the land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. The young man squandered his money. He was hungry, and he was desperate. And desperate times call for desperate measures." That's what happened here. Now, we might think, well, at least when times were hard for him, he got a job working with pigs. To us, that's okay. The way to survive. What we think of a pig is different from what Jews thought of a pig, though. In Leviticus chapter 11, verses 1 through 8, we find a list of animals that God has mentioned the Israelites could not eat. They were unclean animals. And in Leviticus 11, verses 7 and 8, God says, "And the swine, though it divides the hoof, having cloven hooves, yet does not chew the cud, is unclean to you. Their flesh you shall not eat, and their carcasses you shall not touch. They are unclean to you. For us, tending to a pig is no big deal, but to a Jew, a pig was an unclean animal." This was lower than low. To this young man, this was the most degrading and humiliating task that a Jew could ever do. Despite his job, he's still hungry and lonely, and nobody would help. It's then, the text says in verse 16, he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. Did you ever run away from home? I sort of did. I told mother I was running away. She packed a peanut butter and honey sandwich for me and told me to be careful of the barbed wire fences, and off I went. I did mention I was quite young, right? Anyway, I went to the woods. Now, we had nearly 190 acres, and there were three stands of timber. I got distracted at the first woods by a small pond, and I spent time there watching frogs, trying to catch tadpoles, and then I headed on to the second woods. I ate my sandwich and explored a little bit, and then I took off again, and by the time I got to the third woods, my little legs were getting pretty tired, and I was thirsty. So I headed out of that woods to a blackberry patch that was in the middle of the fields between the three woods. And there were some ripe berries there as well, and I'm sure I made a mess, but I was still thirsty. So I ended up going home because I knew there was water there. And when I got home, Mother gave me a glass of cold well water, which I drank right down. Crazy thing about it was my parents never said a word about my saying that I was running away. I turned around because of my need. I was thirsty. And in a very true sense, that's what happened to the younger son. He knew he was better off at home because his father would take care of his needs. When things weren't going according to his plan, he ended up in a pig pen. And when he realized what was happening, he turned around. Verse 17 says, "But when he came to himself, He said, "How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger?" I suspect that is a lesson for the church. We know that we cannot force people to stay faithful. We can't make Christians go to worship and attend all the services. And guilt trips only go so far with some people. Sometimes we need to let people go and learn from their mistakes so that they will come to their senses. They need to see what they have lost when they were in fellowship with God and they left, fellowship with his people. Let them see that they made a mistake by leaving in the first place. The younger son realized that he was better off at home. He knew that there was food at home. He even knew his father's servants would have food left over, and he worked out what he would say to his father when he got back home. Verses 18 and 19. "I will arise and go to my father, and will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.'" Now that took courage. Yet to reach that point, the young man had to be humbled. He had to learn true humility. And this was indeed true humility that he showed in verse 19, because he intended to ask his father to take him back as a hired servant, not as a son. Now, we should probably be told that there is a difference between a hired servant and what we would call an ordinary servant. An ordinary servant was, in some sense, like a member of the family. They had a place, they had a position. But a hired servant was someone that could be dismissed at a day's notice. They were not part of the family. They did not have a place. A hired servant only worked a day at a time. They had no guarantee of employment. They lived day to day. Think about what he's done and what he's doing. He left home a son, and he's willing to go back as a lonely day laborer. I suspect when he left, he did not have just a few things as an inheritance. His father was likely quite successful. And I base that on the inference that he had full-time servants and part-time servants. That was a sign of wealth back then. But this was a time for humility, a time for submission, a time for swallowing his pride. Let's take a closer look at what he did. First of all, the text says in verse 17 that he came to his senses. In other words, using that terminology, he was out of his mind when he left his father's house. It's only now that he truly sees himself for the first time. Folks, it's never easy to take a close look at yourself, is it? It's never easy, and sometimes you see things that are scary and you'd rather not see. When he comes to his senses, that's the point where he starts to his return journey back to his father. Second, verse 18, he says, "I will arise and go." When he left home, he did not have any intention of coming back. He was only looking forward to the pleasure and the freedom that he thought he saw and wanted for himself. Now that he saw himself more clearly, he saw his father in a different light. And that's something else we need to remember. When you look at yourself clearly, your opinion of other people changes too, doesn't it? Third, it says in verse 20, he arose and came to his father. When circumstances woke him up, he did not hesitate. He got up and he went. There was no thinking time between the saying and the doing. His mind was made up. He didn't waver. He didn't change his mind. When we think about it, though, today, there are many people in the world who aren't Christians that are caught between the saying and the doing. They're saying, but they're not doing. And that's not where he is. Fourth, in verse 21, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son." This is his confession. When he reached a decision to return to his father, he already had his confession prepared. Notice his confession. There is no messing around with words. There is no excuse for what he has done. He speaks the truth. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. In the parables of the lost sheep and the lost coin and the lost son, Jesus teaches us a great deal about mankind. Jesus teaches us that men are lost. It's interesting that Jesus very seldom uses the term sinners, but rather he spoke of men as being lost. When Jesus is sending out the 12, he tells them not to go to the Gentiles or to any Samaritan towns. He tells them in Matthew 10, verse 6, go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. When Jesus' disciples are being harassed by a woman who has a demon-possessed daughter, Jesus said in Matthew 15, verse 24, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Jesus isn't saying that he counted them as moral wretches or outlaws or in any headstrong rebellion against God, but simply people that are lost, misguided. They were people that were disillusioned and needed to get back on the right road. Of course, there's still people like that today, aren't there? They're lost like the sheep described in verses 3 through 7. They are not consciously revolting against God nor fighting against his church. They simply slip away from him step by step. They wander off in search of something that's attracted them, greener grass, something that's more attractive than what they have, something they think will satisfy. The son here was like that. In his view of the world, what was out there was calling to him, dragging his mind away from his home and his family. And we see that all the time in our youth. Hebrews 2 verse 1 says, therefore we must give the more earnest heed to the things we have heard, lest we drift away. Saying it a different way, we have to pay more attention to what we've been taught so that we do not drift away. That's what happens to many Christians in the world today. Many people just drift away. They slip along in the ebb and flow of the world, and they become spiritually numb. People are also like the coin described in verses 8 and 10, although there is a big difference between coins and people. The coin was lost through no fault of its own, but with men there is always the responsibility of choice that governs their destiny. The coin was lost in a sense that a man could never be. Yet it is true that many people's lives are wrecked, not always because of their own fault, but because of the fault of other people. Finally, some people are like the lost son, which we're studying this evening. We talked about pride and self before. We know that self, pride, can lead to sin and its downfall of many a soul. Many people deliberately, with their eyes open, forsake the Lord and go off on their own. And folks, this is the essence of sin, the desire to please self despite the consequences, to do what one wants to do regardless of the feelings of others. That is the core of sin. Instead of pursuing the will of God, they pursue the will of self, just like this young man did when he left his father. Let's take another look at the young son. He was lost, but he also lost some things. He lost the fellowship of his father and the comfort of his home. Think about it. He had lived in a home with family and servants to wait on him, hired hands to assist. He had the best father a son could have, but all these things meant nothing to him until he was left friendless in a strange land. Although he knew what his father was like, he still went off to a far country and ended up in a pig pen. He was out of reach of his father. He was lost to the fellowship of his father. He lost something else, too. He lost his self-esteem. He left home full of self-esteem and confidence, head held high in self-worth, and ended up working in a field with some pigs. He threw away his family because of his pride and ended up with the pigs. Have you ever been in a strange country or a strange place where you don't know anyone? What he felt was probably worse, far worse. He was unknown, unneeded, unwanted, and unloved in a far-off country where nothing is familiar. He lost everything he had. Verse 14 tells us he spent everything he had. It's amazing how the inheritance that was received so easily was so easily squandered. Easy come, easy go, some might say. But folks, he lost it all. He lost everything. He had no real friends, no real pleasures, no real freedom, no real independence, and no real pride. He lost everything, and now he's in a mess. I wonder how the congregation would deal with someone who went off and lived like this, and then came to their senses and came back. You see, the shepherd with the sheep, the woman with the coin, the father with the son, were filled with great joy when they gained again what had been lost. That's because God is kind, and he is more understanding than we will ever be. He feels deep in his heart the joy of joys when one wanderer returns home. And this is obvious in verses 20 through 24. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, Bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. Now, folks, that's the example that the church must follow. No moral lectures, no making them feel inferior when they return, just pure joy. And now we come to the part of the parable that, frankly, I don't like. I wish I could just leave it there at verse 24, because that's a happy ending. But sadly, it doesn't work that way. God has more for us. And there are some serious lessons we can learn from the older brother's reactions. The older son was saved, but lost. Starting at verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, Your brother has come, and because he has received him safe and sound, your father has killed a fatted calf. But he was angry and would not go in. Therefore his father came out and pleaded with him. You see, the older brother was a self-righteous sort of man. He could find nothing good in the life of his younger brother. Everything his brother had done was bad. But as for him, he was proud of himself and proud of his life. He said to his father in verse 29, and I paraphrase, Look, all these years I've been slaving for you. I've never disobeyed your orders. He was very proud. He was very much like the Pharisees who started Jesus off on these parables by accusing him of associating and receiving sinners. The older brother was so jealous that he would not even go inside to greet his brother. He decided to stay outside the house and throw himself a pity party. He decided to sulk. He said to his father at the end of verse 29, Yet you never gave me a young goat that I may make merry with my friends. You could almost hear the self-righteousness in those words. He was full of pride. Most of all, the older brother was just heartless. He wasn't happy at all that his brother had come home. He would probably have been happier if his brother had been beaten up and kicked out. Bit like the woman who went to a police station with her next-door neighbor to report her husband who was missing. The officer at the desk asked for a description. She said, He's 35 years old, 6'2", has dark eyes, wavy hair, athletic build, weighs 180 pounds, soft-spoken and good with the children. Her next-door neighbor protested, Wait a minute. Your husband is 5'4", chubby, bald, has a big mouth, and he's mean to the kids. Wife replied, Sure, but who wants him back? That was the attitude of the older brother. Who wants him back? Verse 30 says, but as soon as this son of yours, notice he didn't say my brother, as soon as this son of yours came, who devoured your livelihood with harlots, you killed a fatted calf for him. He was jealous and heartless. All he cared about was himself. And he was also disrespectful to his father with these words. He was angry and jealous, self-righteous, even when his father says to him in verse 31, son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. In other words, your brother has squandered all that was his, but you still have your inheritance. In fact, it is likely twice as much as his brother had, but he still didn't want to listen. He was hurting himself without realizing it. I'll give you an illustration. A little bit like little Johnny, who went to the Army surplus store one day and bought a grenade, not knowing that it was a practice grenade. He strapped it to his waist. His friend asked him why he did that. Johnny said, there's this guy that keeps picking on me, and if he pushes me today, he's going to blow off his hand. He's not thinking straight. He needs to come to his senses. Even when his father tells him, it was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive and was lost and is found, in verse 32, even then his anger took hold of him. He just couldn't see that if his father had gained a son, he had gained a brother. His whole attitude shows us that his years of obedience to his father had been years of grim duty and not loving service. There's not a sympathetic bone in his body. And notice again, he refers to his brother not as my brother, but your son. The lesson from this parable is severe. You don't necessarily have to go on a long journey to leave God. You can stay at home and not know your father, not know your father's heart, even though you're still at home. You can be lost at home just as you can be lost anywhere in the world. God's attitude is seen in the diligent search of the shepherd and the woman in the other two parables. Because it's one thing to accept a sinner, it's another thing to go out and look for them. Once again, Jesus is revealing an amazing truth here, and that truth is it's easier to confess to God than it is to many a man. The truth is that God is far more merciful in his judgments than we will ever be with our fellow man. The truth is that the love of God is far broader than the love we have for each other. When we are faced with a love like that, we have to be lost in wonder, love and praise. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law would have said, who cares? It's just one lost sheep. Jesus would say, rejoice with me. I have found my lost sheep. The Pharisees and teachers of the law would have said, what's a coin? It's just a coin. Jesus would say, rejoice with me. I have found my lost coin. The Pharisees and teachers of the law would have said, cancel the party and throw him out. Jesus would say, and says still today, we are to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours who is dead is alive again. He was lost and is found. That's love, that's forgiveness, and it's worth rejoicing. We learn from the New Testament how to be saved. We need to hear the word, believe in Jesus, repent of our sins. We need to confess our belief that Jesus is the Son of God, and then be baptized for the remission of our sins. If we follow those steps, the Lord adds us to his church. If there is anyone here in the assembly this evening that has a need, we invite you to come forward while we stand and sing the song that has been selected.